You are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
Go on riverboat gambling trips.
You're going to die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
It was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Away we go. Chicken Dinner, Tuesday, March 22nd, 2022. Follow on Twitter at ChickenXDinner. DMs are always open for you. And smash the button, subscribe to this podcast so you get it once it hits the streets. We will talk to Mike Helfgott, the coach, NFL, NBA draft expert. Mike is already building a draft portfolio in the NFL. He's got Aiden Hutchinson under 1.5 at minus 180. I looked up this morning. Hutchinson to go number one is minus 400. Now, we've missed the move on that, but as you know, Mike makes us money. Last year, he gave us Mac Jones under 17.5. That market closed 3.5. He gave us J.C. Horn under 13.5. He was the first defensive player taken. Mike also helped confirm Kyle Pitts, one of the best bets we've ever made on this show, under 5.5, which I believe opened at minus 130. Closed at minus 5,000 or off the board, depending on where you shopped. So he studies this stuff, and he is able to read between the lines and study and mine all the information from the draft experts. So we'll talk to Mike about building his portfolio and also assessing the markets that are out there and forecasting what is yet to come. I was looking at DraftKings this morning, and I only saw 8 players have draft positions. Eventually, when we get to April, there will be more. And there was one player, Mike says, that we will attack right away once it pops. So a lot of draft conversation coming up later on in the show. I'm feeling very reflective today. This is my 33rd birthday. Crazy to believe that. 33 years old today. And I was thinking last night as I landed in Florida to spend some time with my family for a couple of days before getting back to Boston for Red Sox season and the launch of our sports betting show, what a ride this has been. And I'm not just talking about from 2020 when I thought I was going to Nesson in March and before I was signing my contract, COVID hit and everything went to shit for about 9 months or so. And everything eventually worked out, as you know. But 10 years ago, I'm producing Cubs baseball and writing sportscasts every half hour for David Kaplan at WGN Radio. 10 years later, television show in New England. And a lot of ups and a lot of downs and having no money and living on a mattress on a floor, moving to Vegas, 2 steps forward, leaving Vegas, 5 steps back, reconnecting with Rick Jaffe in Boston. It's been a hell of a ride. Where I am, where I've been, and I'm honored to be able to have this platform to work at Nesson and write columns and host podcasts and do television, to be a writer and a video person at Fox Sports. This podcast, which Joe Ostrowski and I started as a pipe dream in August of 2016, because nobody in Chicago was talking sports betting. I couldn't talk about it at WGN. Joe couldn't talk about it at The Score. And that was really the show that helped us launch our respective careers to the next level. Doing radio at WGN in Chicago still with John Williams. All my buddies, New York, Austin, Washington, D.C., Las Vegas, just having fun talking shop. It is clear when you look at the numbers at how much Americans wagered on sports in 2021, $57 billion, according to the American Gaming Association, this is what people do. They bet on sports. They like to have a little skin in the game. Why else would you watch the Lions play the Bears in the middle of December? Why else would you have the game on in the fourth quarter when Alabama is playing Louisiana Monroe? It was in the back corners. It was in the alleys for a long, long, long time. And those days are over. It is just so refreshing and so fucking cool to be able to have a job where I wake up every morning and go to sleep sometimes in the morning and love what I do. And I've ran into several people in Boston since moving there, whether it's me wearing the Chicken Dinner hoodie or me meeting friends of friends and people coming up and saying, hey, the podcast rocks. And I always ask, why do you enjoy it? Why do you like the podcast? I feel like the average response is it has made me think about things differently. I have expanded my horizons. I'm learning what to do and what not to do. I remind you, I am not a professional bettor or a professional handicapper. I think I'm good at certain sports. I'm still learning at other things. But this show was supposed to be for you, and it always has been for you. And I want to thank you. I sound like a broken record because I'm always thanking you for listening. But without you, this show isn't possible. So at age 33, long way to go, I hope. Knock on wood there. But thanks for taking this ride with us. And so much more to come in the following weeks and months and years. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Mr. March returned. Those of you that have followed for years know that that's the time that Chicken Dinner shines. The opening weekend. Specifically, Thursday and Friday. Those have always been my best days in the NCAA tournament. I don't know what it is. I think my ability to balance perception and reality with all 64 teams is pretty strong. I did give a little bit back on Saturday and Sunday. I had Richmond plus +3 on Saturday against Providence. That was a dud. And then Texas getting 4. Who'd they play? Purdue. And Purdue outshot them at the free throw line 46-12. Totally a fair fight. But the run we had to open the dance, there's nothing like it. And there's nothing like having all of your best friends and your buddies at work and your buddies from home and people you've met along the way tailing that streak. It started with Bryant-Wright State over 152, close 156. The game at halftime, what was it, 44-42 at half or something like that? And I'm thinking, look, I just need to get sprung here. Just give me one win. And then we'll find the rest of the way. Vermont plus +5. Providence minus -2. Michigan money line. Georgia State plus +23.5. Akron plus +14. Colgate plus +7.5. Texas money line. Arizona, Wright State, over 155.5. A couple losses in there. Iowa minus -10. Dud. Loyola, dead. Davidson, lucky push. You need some breaks to go your way. Georgia State's down to Gonzaga at half by 2, and then Gonzaga goes on a 21-0 run, and there's a chance Gonzaga covers. But the number was too big, and we got the right number. We didn't get 21.5, we got 23.5. Davidson, open 2, went to 1.5 real quick on the plus side. I sent out plus +1. Davidson closes minus -1. Good call on Davidson. They were the favorite. No, they weren't. We sent out plus +1. Were we lucky? Yes, but this thing takes some luck. There's a lot of skill, but there's quite a bit of luck at times. 9-2-1 opening round. 9-2-1. And all day Thursday, you know, the techs are coming in. Stay hot, kid. Stay hot, kid. That's the plan. First game was Michigan, and that was one of the first games that went up in the air. 12:15 Eastern, I think. So you start with a win on Thursday. And then you get Providence in there, which started, I think, a half hour or 45 minutes later. By the time the Thursday slate ended, 6-1. And if you know me, you know what I was doing Thursday. I was at the bar way too late, had way too many shots, and I had to do some explaining to the girlfriend the next day. She's like, you came home at X. I'm like, I don't remember. I'm sorry? Question mark. The whole universe is buying me drinks and virtual drinks and sending money. And it's just like, it's that stretch from Thursday tip-off until the last game on Friday is my favorite in betting. It always has been. It always will be. And that was a hell of a ride. And I wanted to just talk about how cool that was to sit around all day Thursday and just put them in the left column. We had one in the right column that was Iowa, but it was a great opening round, which leads us now into the Sweet 16. Tap myself on the back, but now we move on because there's more money to be made. I have some early thoughts for these games, And I'll just go in order of the rotation numbers. You know, the first one is Arizona and Houston on the sheet. And at last check, as I pull up the odds board, Arizona, a 2-point favorite against Houston. And the total, pretty good total, I feel like, at 145, because Houston defensively can really slow down the pace of this game. They are an outstanding defense, and they have been over the last couple of seasons. It feels like sort of a good buy low on Arizona. I like Houston a lot, but I don't love Houston. And this is one of the tougher games for me to handicap, because if Arizona's guards are on, they're going to win and cover. But if Houston can muck this up and make it ugly and their guards can stop Arizona's guards, we're talking about a game that could be, I don't know, 68-65, 70-67. I lean under, but it's not one of my favorite games to handicap. Villanova, Michigan. Had Michigan in my bracket that nobody cares about in the Sweet 16. But now the Wolverines face one of the most efficient teams we've seen ever. No hyperbole, ever. Not only are they on pace to be the best free throw shooting team of all time, if they can stay at 82.6% or higher, they almost never turn the basketball over. Go look at their box score. 7 turnovers, 9 turnovers, 6 turnovers, 10 turnovers. For context, in Arizona's first game against Wright State of all teams, the Wildcats had 20 turnovers. So anything sub 10 in college is outstanding. They do it regularly. And you look at the way that this game has moved, Villanova opened 4 offshore. Most books opened 4.5, got to 5, and now I'm looking at BetOnline and bookmaker Chris having 5.5. That's a pretty telling move here. And as you know, in the second weekend, the underdogs usually run into trouble. They are outclassed. They are outskilled. The teams, like the St. Peter's team, that's a really great story. Is St. Peter's going to beat Purdue? I wish, after my Twitter war with Purdue and the entire state of Texas over my free throw tweet, which again was just a fact that went in all sorts of directions, I guess, but Purdue fans explaining to me how basketball works. Well, if you foul more, you shoot more free throws. Thank you for the tip. I didn't play basketball through high school and announce college basketball for 8 seasons. I wasn't aware of the rules. I wasn't sure that if you got fouled more, you shot more. You can't justify, though, and some people are still doing it days after the game and the tweet, justifying the fact that we saw one of the largest free throw discrepancies in the history of college basketball in the tournament. 46 for one team at the line, 12 for the other. But the point is, these dogs usually fall flat second weekend. Everybody loves the potential for a George Mason run in 06, but more times than not, the underdogs get snuffed out. And that's what I feel like is about to happen to Michigan. Gonzaga, Arkansas. This opened 8.5 up to 9. This total doesn't feel high enough at 155. And I actually see a couple books down to 154.5. So that's interesting, but I don't think this total's high enough because both teams love to push the pace and they can score in a variety of ways. But you also look at the way that these teams shoot from downtown. You're looking for teams that can make 3-point shots. And Gonzaga from downtown is 37%. They're a top 20 team in the country, but they also score from 2 as well with Holmgren and Timmy. Number 1 team in the country in 2-point percentage, 61%. Gonzaga is 6th in tempo. So they're going to score. Well, what about Arkansas? 28th in tempo. They don't make the threes the way you'd like. They're 30%, 30.5%, but a good game, they could shoot 40, no doubt. They're 50% from 2. They're 76% at the line. But they're still a top 50 offense in efficiency. And if you've watched Gonzaga at all, they aren't going to slow things down. If anything, they play with speed because they've got bigs that can grab the ball and move it. How many times have I seen Chet Holmgren this year grab a rebound and fly up the floor with the ball, dribbling it? So if these teams are making anywhere near their average numbers, I think this is an overbet. I think this game could be in the 80s. And if Gonzaga misses some threes, guess what? Arkansas and their havoc, they're going to fly up and down, and they're going to turn those missed threes into layups or dunks or wide-open shots. So unless somebody shoots 2 of 20 from 3, like Illinois, or whatever they shot, it felt like 2 for 20, then yeah, the game's going to go under. But if this game is played 100 times, I feel like it goes over 60 to 65% of the time. That's how I feel about it. Texas Tech and Duke, I'm in a pretzel on this game. Really, really tough. Very telling that the market immediately moved away from Duke. Texas Tech opened minus 1. It got to 2, then returned to 1. Returned to sender. It's also scary as hell to bet against Coach K in his last big dance. There has never been a better ref whisperer than Coach K. I think the Red Raiders are a better all-around team. I've been very clear. I think the Big 12 was the best conference this year, but it's also Duke in the tournament and Mike Krzyzewski's last tournament. So I'm very torn on this one. Two blue bloods meeting in the East, UCLA, North Carolina. This game's a total coin flip. I've been told Tar Heels would be about a 3.5-point dog against Purdue, by the way, if they get by UCLA. I sort of lean to the over in this one, too, because UCLA's defense is far from great. And you look at the way they played in the last two games, you go, oh, well, they haven't really played in some shootouts. Well, look who the Bruins played. In the first game, they played Akron, who ranked 361st in tempo out of like 366 teams. So that game was going to be a crawl. And then they faced St. Mary's, who walks up and down the floor. North Carolina is the polar opposite of St. Mary's and Akron. And I feel like UCLA's transition defense is going to be exposed in this matchup. So I lean over here. The market mostly 142, 141.5 actually. So again, money on the under, but I think that's more of people watching the last couple games with UCLA and seeing them struggle to score a lot and seeing how slow those crawls were. Again, every matchup is different though. If UCLA played Bryant, over. You're going to go over 141.5, 142, obviously. But Carolina, they just bring it. And if Carolina can dictate the pace, UCLA has the talent with Jaquez and Juzang to match the firepower. St. Peter's and Purdue. Purdue just continues to dominate inside, push people around. We haven't really been able to accurately gauge Purdue, though. I mean, Jaden Ivey's an outstanding player, their guard. He's an NBA guard. And they've got the big fella, Edie, who's 7'4", and looks like he's even taller. Travion Williams inside. They pound it inside, and they get to the line. But, I mean, Texas outscored them quite a bit. I was looking for the number. I think I had a screen grab of it. If you just took the free throws out of the game, Texas outscored them immensely from the field. 64-48, Texas outscored them from the floor. But Purdue still wins the game by, well, I think, almost 10 because they shot 42 free throws. I still don't think we know what Purdue is. I have Purdue in my Final Four. I thought they were a very decent bet at like plus 500 to win the region. But now I'm like anti-Purdue because they piss me off and their fans piss me off even more. If St. Peter's can match the physicality and the toughness, they have a shot to hang inside this number at 12.5. I don't think they're going to win the game. Looking at the money line here, 7-1 at South Point. That's the best number that I can see. Mostly 670, 675. But St. Peter's, if you're looking for a pop there, you can find 12-1 pretty much everywhere. Or plus 12.5, excuse me, on the Peacocks from St. Peter's. I lean that way, but nothing strong. Miami, Iowa State, literally a coin flip. Miami opened 1. And now they're minus 2.5. This total hasn't really budged off 133. I have no feeling on that one. And here's another lesson in how I'm still trying to grow every single day. I have the Kansas future. Chicken Dinner sent out 16-1. A week before, I wrote it on Nesson. So if you read Nesson.com, Nesson bets, they were 20-1. So whatever, anywhere between 16 and 20-1 on Kansas to win the whole thing. They're a touchdown favorite in this game against Providence, and I think that number is probably lower than it should be because there's all of a sudden this respect for Providence. I probably will lay the points, but I'm trying to assure myself that it's what I want to play and not what I'm rooting for. I want Kansas to go to the Final Four. I want them to win the whole thing so we can cash that future. I also have this disdain for these Providence fans that are soft as baby shit, most of them. I tweeted their title odds out, you know, a week ago or so, or actually during the Big East Championship. I'm like, this is why Providence is 100-1 to win the title, and they're still chirping at me for that and still threatening me, believe it or not, and sliding into the DMs, and, you know, it is what it is. So I'm sort of in that position where I have Kansas to win it all, and I want Providence to fall flat because I'm tired of their fans acting like they're the best team ever when they've beaten two high school teams. But is it the right number? 7.5, you know, I've talked to a couple groups. One of them likes Providence. The other one likes Kansas. So I probably stay away here, which leads me into the conversation about the Kansas future and what to do with it. You got to roll it through at this point. I mean, you look at the number. I pulled up oddsboom.com. Great tool. If you don't use it, please do. Oddsboom.com. They have pretty much all the American books and the prices. So, for example, Kansas now, the lowest price in the world, Twin Spires and Unibet, along with Sugar House, have Kansas at 4-1 to win the title. Barstool, 4-1 as well. On the high side, FanDuel, Bet365, and PointsBet all have 5-1. So if you have 16-1 or 20-1, you're in a great spot. I still think you have to roll this through, though, because, as I said, Kansas is a 7-point favorite. 7.5, if you want to get technical. So the math on that, on the money line, Kansas is going to have a very good shot to win this game. Kansas on the money line is high as minus 360. So if you pop in 360 into your betting calculator and get the implied probability, you're talking about 78%. So 78% of the time, Kansas beats Providence on a neutral court. So you have to roll it through. And there's still too much to happen. There are still 16 teams. They still have to win 4 games. So you just roll it. You don't do anything. You don't hedge. You don't buy Providence futures. You don't take Providence on the money line. You get through this game. And then it gets even better because the market numbers, and I think it's important to understand market numbers, and Jeff Fogel is a great follow for this stuff, at Jeff Fogel, F-O-G-L-E. He tweets out the estimated market power ratings, and Gonzaga's a 91. Kansas an 88. So on a neutral, ideally, Gonzaga's -3 against Kansas. You subtract the one number from the other. Arizona, 87. Purdue, Villanova, Texas Tech, 86. Duke, UCLA, Houston, 85. Arkansas, Carolina, 83. Michigan, Providence, 81. Miami, 78. Iowa State, 77. St. Peter, 74. So when you pull up the bracket and see who Kansas would meet next, we're talking about either Miami or Iowa State. If Kansas plays Miami, they're a 10-point favorite. If Kansas plays Iowa State, they're an 11-point favorite. And those money lines are notably higher than minus 360 or minus 370. We're talking about Kansas in an Elite Eight game being minus 500 or higher to win the game. So you have to just roll this out. What you can do, though, is you can look at other teams now. Gonzaga. Do you really want to bet Gonzaga at plus 240? Not really, but if you're helping your position on Kansas at 20-1, you might as well bet Gonzaga now. They're an 8-point favorite against Arkansas, and assuming they face Duke, we're talking about Gonzaga against Duke. Gonzaga's a 6-point favorite there. If Gonzaga goes to the Final Four, guess what? They are now plus 175 to win the national championship. So you could, if you would like, you could take Gonzaga at plus 240 right now and put that next to your position on Kansas. If you don't like Gonzaga, and some of you don't, look at another team. Arizona is interesting, but I like Villanova more. I think on a neutral, yeah, the numbers say Arizona would be 1 on Nova. And I like Nova more because their guards are better, I believe. More consistent, more efficient, better shooters, better free throw shooters. And you look at the price. Arizona right now at FanDuel, plus 650 to win the title. Villanova, if you look, you can find 16-1 on Villanova. Even though the market rating is only 1 point off, the future number is much higher. How about that? Arizona market price 5.5. 5-1 mostly, but a lot of 5.5 in there. So Arizona plus 500 to win the title. Villanova's market, 13-14-1. And the teams are a point off. So if you have a Kansas future and you're looking for something to hedge, don't hedge with Providence. Don't hedge in the next round. Take a future on another team that you like. It could be Gonzaga. It could be Arizona. It could be Purdue. Superbook has 10-1 on Purdue. It's up to you. But the right future bet puts you in the right spot going forward. And that's how I'm going to attack this Kansas thing. I'm not going to actually take anybody. I'm more than okay if we get to a title game where it's Gonzaga, Kansas, and I haven't made a hedge position. I will take, let's see, if I have 20 units rolling, I'll probably take 5 or 6 and put it on the Gonzaga money line. And if it's Gonzaga, Kansas, it's likely Gonzaga minus 3, 3.5. So money line minus 160, minus 170, 5 units on that, and then I win no matter what. That's my plan, but things could change, as you know. Let's see how much time we have here. Okay, not much looking at the timer. So we'll save the baseball talk for Thursday's show, and we'll have our Sweet 16 picks finalized by that point. But I wanted to bring up a conversation we had 2 weeks ago quickly about the Indianapolis Colts and them having a plan for the quarterback. You knew when they traded Carson Wentz, they would have an idea that they were going to improve at the position. And I said, when they got rid of Wentz, you may want to take a peek at Indianapolis at 30-1 to win the Super Bowl, 35-1 if you shopped around. And they were, you know, as high as 20-1 to win the AFC. I think they were 225 or 250 to win the division. Well, plan A was Deshaun Watson. That didn't work. Plan B, clearly, was Matt Ryan. And here come the bets and the market moves on the Indianapolis Colts. Superbook took a $5,400 bet on Indy to win the AFC at 15-1. $5,400 to win $81,000. And I promise you, that is not the only book that got hit. If you look now at the Indianapolis Colts, their future positions have changed, not drastically, but noticeably. You're talking about the Colts now to win the AFC. As I pull up OddsBoom, you could find the Colts as high as 15-1 still. But some books, Tipico is at 9-1. They took some action. Playup is at 9-1. PointsBet, 12-1. FoxBet, 12-1. DraftKings, 12-1. FanDuel, 13. Superbook in Vegas, 15. Circa, 15. Why bet 9 when you can bet 15? Yes, the AFC is loaded. Bills, Chiefs, Broncos, Chargers, Browns, Bengals, Ravens, Colts. Still, if the Colts can get hot behind their offensive line and Jonathan Taylor and Matt Ryan being an accurate quarterback that can find open targets, if that team can win 13 games or so, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but if it does, and they are the 1 or the 2 or the 3 seed in the AFC, and you've got 15-1 on them to win the conference, that ticket is sellable, it's hedgeable, it's profitable. And that team has a plan. Last year, they were a quarterback away from being a legit team. They did a lot of great stuff with a bad quarterback. Okay, an average quarterback. Imagine what they could do with Matt Ryan. So those Colts futures, as we talked about, on the move, because clearly they had a plan. Joining us again on Chicken Dinner, he's getting closer and closer to the fifth appearance when we send him the red Chicken Dinner jacket like they do on SNL for his guest appearances. Mike Helfgott, the coach who has been studying draft markets for the last couple of years, NBA and NFL draft. Going to talk about how he forecasts the market and some of the positions he's already made. Welcome back, coach.
Hey, coach.
So you've got a couple pops already in the kitty, and you did this because DraftKings and a couple other books, they actually put up some stuff earlier this year. Usually we saw a lot of the props and the options go up post-combine for the draft that comes at the end of April, but there's a couple bets you've already made. Why don't you share those with us, please?
Well, early on when the only market available was the number one pick, as soon as Jacksonville was clear that they were going to be the number one, a couple of the experts kind of speculated that they were going to go offensive tackle. I managed to get Evan Neal very early, a plus 750. Aquanu, I got some at 800, plus some at 800, some at 700 for weeks. Every guy, and these guys are right on this. You know, we can talk a little bit more about why. But some of these guys who are scouts and they're sort of draft journalists, for lack of a better term, they're on it. And they were very convinced. All the other mock drafts that you see kind of follow these several guys. Everybody had one or the other for weeks. All of a sudden, Jacksonville signs Cam Robinson and Aiden Hutchinson becomes the favorite. So I've got positions at 800 and 700 on Neal and Aquanu. A little bit on Hutchinson at 170 to offset. So probably not a lot of money to be made there. Probably not a lot of money to be lost there either. Right now, currently, Hutchinson is a big favorite, as you know, minus 200 or more. And again, that's all on speculation after the Cam Robinson signed that they wouldn't sign a tackle. It just goes to show, really underscore my point and the reason that I think that you can be successful doing this. The narrative absolutely drives these odds. So you follow the people that drive the narrative, you're going to know when the odds are going to move. Other positions I have are initially Hutchinson came out under 2.5, jumped on that even at minus 190. And, you know, now it's 1.5. So that was a good position to take. Also, Thibodeau over 4.5. Now you find 5.5 juiced at like 160. So that was a good one as well. So I've got a few good ones. I think I have Gardner as the first cornerback at minus 150. You're not going to find that under 200 at this point.
So now you'll spin it forward, and you're building a portfolio. Why don't you explain to the people how you do this? Because you know, I mean, even with that number one overall pick bet, you're going to lose two of those. But if you win the right one, you're going to make good money here. How do you build this portfolio, and how did you sort of develop this strategy where every bet you make has a purpose?
The market is so volatile. You know, we saw just an example I was giving you. Neal opened at 750. Then he's the odds on favorite. There was a time where Neal and Aquanu were about even. Now they're both over 400 everywhere, over 500. I've seen Aquanu almost 800, which I'm already sort of leveraged on him, or else I would be jumping back on that. I would tell people listening now, if you see Aquanu at plus 800, it's silly not to jump on it, because that's just a bad number. And you know, as the market shifts, these odds shift dramatically. And I think books get to the point where they don't want any more money. I think they just don't want any more Hutchinson money, and that's why we're seeing a lot of minus 250s.
You texted me, I think it was just about a week ago, give or take a day or two, and you said, watch out for this Thibodeau stock. And at that point, he was 4.5 on that at that point, and you're like, he's going to rise. The stock is going to drop. He's going to go lower than people expect. And I think within 12 hours, that line went from 4.5. I don't remember the juice. It went from 4.5 and it blew to 5.5. And now we're seeing over 5.5 minus 150.
Right.
Is that a trend that's going to keep running? Is that going to keep rising on him?
On him, I don't know. I stuck on him. I got my 4.5 and I actually see one. There's one offshore that's still 4.5. And I'm just a little bit hesitant to I talked to some people who play offshore. I'm a little hesitant to give it to them because I'm not positive, because the guy did run a 4.58 and he is very polished. There's nothing. It's not as if he's a project. It's just that there's off field concerns. There's attitude concerns. There's concerns that this is Kyrie Irving or Jadeveon Clowney. And do you really want to draft that guy in the top four, especially the Jets at 3? The New York market is such a bad play, or 4, the New York market is wrong for him. The Giants are at 5. Houston's at 3 with Lovie Smith and trying to emulate New England. You wouldn't think they would want a guy like that. At the same time, something is stopping me, because he was considered the number one player in this class for a long time.
I remember he was plus 110 around the Super Bowl or maybe AFC NFC championship. Like he was plus 110 in a lot of places, even when you had Neal. And I talked about that on Chicken Dinner before the national championship, that you like Neal. So somebody somewhere that listens to the show got down, but Neal wasn't really the favorite. Thibodeau was the favorite, I remember, through the NFL season. And that's sort of where you're at right now, where he was projected to go number one, and now he's at 5.5. And internally, you've got to ask yourself, well, if I had the right number, like the right number might be 4.5, but you don't want to overextend on somebody whose stock has already fallen.
Well, yeah, I'm very confident that the information that comes out is good information, because it's just that we talked about it around the basketball draft. It's this community of people. Everybody's benefiting from trading information and they're all close. You don't burn relationships with people by just flat out lying to them. It's different if you're in a situation like Jacksonville, where maybe you want to send out a smoke signal to get a team to bite. But otherwise, this is real information trading. But the thing is, it only takes one team to not, you don't, it only takes one team to not agree, you know, with the conventional thought. But the other thing going against Thibodeau here, and the reason I really do feel strongly he's not going top four, probably not top five, is that Trayvon Walker, the defensive end from Georgia, his stock really rose after the combine. So there's most people that do this think Walker is going before Thibodeau. So most believe that Thibodeau is the third, possibly even the fourth defensive end after Jermaine Johnson of Florida State to go.
And if that's the case, he's not going fourth, and he's likely not going fifth. I'm going to start sharing the goods here with the draft. We haven't given out any draft bets yet at Chicken X Dinner. But
right. I will say, though, that if Hutchinson goes one and Detroit really wants a defensive end and they take Walker two, that still gives two teams the possibility. And I stated why I don't think either one of those teams would take Thibodeau, just telling you why I'm a little bit – why I didn't go crazy with this bet.
When you see a draft bet pop on the Twitter feed, you know it's because we've had conversations with Mike Helfgott, who's joining us now on the show. Last NFL draft, he gave us Mac Jones under 17.5. That number closed at 3.5. Still had to sweat it. He went 15th to the Patriots, but the line movement there from 17.5 to 3.5, amazing. Mike also gave us J.C. Horn under 13.5, and he was the first defensive player taken. And then in the NBA draft, you gave us Duarte under 21.5, Sharp under 33.5, and also Duarte over Man, which I think opened at 135 and then got to minus 250, and then the book said, fuck it, we're just not going to take bets on this anymore.
And it was only a few picks difference. That one was closer than I would have thought, too.
That was a sweat, yeah, no doubt about it. Are there any other draft positions at this point that you're waiting on? As I look at DraftKings, which I think of the American books has the most options up right now, they've given us Evan Neal 3.5, Hutchinson 1.5, Thibodeau 5.5, Charles Cross 6.5, Ekwonu 3.5, Gardner 8.5, Kyle Hamilton 6.5. Is there somebody you're waiting for the books to post?
Trevor Penning, offensive tackle for Northern Iowa. He's got a wide range. I think he's going to go top 10. I'm really curious to see where they're going to put that number, because at the start of this silly mock draft season, he was late first round. He impressed everybody at the Senior Bowl, had another good showing at the combine. And I mean, I might click on every mock draft that I come across, but I don't take every one of them seriously. The ones I take seriously love him. And these are the reason I take these seriously is because these are guys who start their sentences with, well, I just got off the phone with an NFL general or manager, and they routinely do. And these guys have podcasts and they write, and that's all I do is I hang on every word. You know, I'm not scouting these guys. There's no point in that.
First quarterback is interesting. We've seen Willis get sort of slammed up a little bit, and then the eventual buyback, because Willis at one point was minus 200, maybe even a little north of that. And now I'm seeing some minus 175. Kenny Pickett is plus 195. I've got a buddy of mine who's very sharp. He is bullish that Desmond Ridder is going to be the first quarterback. It's a very weird year for quarterbacks because none of them jump off the page to me is like the guy, but the market says it's Willis or Pickett, then everybody else. How do you assess this market?
I actually love your buddy's thought. I mean, I doubt it, but it's really going to come down to which team wants to take one first. Not every team right now, if you pulled the teams, they would be split because Willis is a project. And as exciting as he was during the Senior Bowl and on the combine, when I listen to like these ex-GM types, as opposed to these draft types, like a Michael Lombardi or a Randy Mueller has a great podcast on The Athletic on Saturdays. They don't pull any punches and they just talk about how terrible Willis's tape is. So these other guys are getting in love with his traits, and they the draft guys don't like to criticize too much, I've noticed. So you kind of got to really listen between the words, so to speak, when they talk about a guy being a prize. But Randy Mueller said he had to turn Willis' tape off. I heard Mike Lombardi yesterday really disregard Liberty, disregard Willis, and actually talk about Ritter. So I don't think it's worth betting Pickett or Willis because I think you're guessing.
Are four quarterbacks going in the first round?
No, not after all this flurry of activity. That's the thing. Brady coming, like, just so much has happened. The fact that we're confident Watson's going to land somewhere changes it too. Wherever Watson lands is one less team that would draft a quarterback.
I'm seeing now 3.5 quarterbacks in round one. And to your point, the under has been hit up to minus 170.
Yeah, but it's been that way. That's not even new. That might be juiced up a little, but it's, yeah, it's been that way.
I think this one's a little bit new. I see FanDuel, well, new is a relative term, I guess. I mean, you've probably seen these, and this might not be new to you, but it's new to me because I don't study the draft markets like you do, at least not yet. I'm seeing FanDuel's got first wide receiver selected. Have you seen this one yet?
Yeah, it opened up. London actually opened up the favorite the first day Offshores released it. I actually jumped on Wilson at plus 170. He's now about even money, right?
Yeah, plus 120, Drake London 150, Jameson Williams 7-1. Who's taking a kid that just blew his knee out at 7-1?
Well, it's not going to be – I doubt it's going to be Williams. Here's the thing. Here's what people can do. Here's an actionable strategy. Pay careful attention to London's pro day. He broke his ankle, missed – well, I think he played 8 games, very impressive 8 games. He's got the size, the speed to be, you know, former basketball player. He's got like a 540 dunk online. He's got the size to be that, you know, downfield, you know, and red zone threat. So he's going to have his pro day. Right now, everyone thinks it's going to be Wilson. This world is so fickle. If London gets all this hype and everyone talks about what a great pro day he had, the line's going to move. So jump on it before it does. Or if you really are convicted on Wilson, just wait for London's pro day. Either way, wait for London's pro day and see what happens because the numbers are probably going to move because everyone always talks about how great these pro days are.
And if you live in a state that has multiple outs, please just shop around. I'm looking now.
Crucial.
It turns out that DraftKings has this up as well, and I also see a couple other books with this up as I'm now studying the wide receiver and the first one to go, number one. You can find Drake London at plus 135, at plus 150, at plus 165, and at plus 175. So that's four different books and four different prices.
Right. So if you've got a 175 and he's got a pro day was great and you start hearing some talk about it, just beat the crowd. That's all I do is I'm beating the steam by paying careful attention.
What are you hoping for? What are you looking for? Is there an angle? I mean, you brought up Trevor Penning already. You're going to pounce on that prop. If they do post that, even though he's the fourth lineman on the sheet to be selected first, you still think he could go top 10. So we're looking at a number on Penning, and you'll go under anything probably north of 12.5, 13.5. But is there anything else that you're looking at? We got a long way to go until this draft, but if you wanted to play weatherman for a second, give me your best Tom Skilling.
The best thing I'm looking for is just changes. I'm just looking for storms. I'm not forecasting any, but I know that that's when the opportunities come. When there are changes in narrative, the market reacts and swiftly.
I am so excited now. I wrote Trevor Penning in all caps on my notepad, and I'm circling it as we speak because I'll be honest with you, Mike, I don't even know who this guy is. But now I will attack when I see the right number. What's your guess on that prop if they were going to put that up for the number?
10.5.
Oh, really? Okay, so that's going to be a really good line. We might not bet that.
I mean, I don't think he's going to get out of the top seven, but I don't have, you know, I'm just going off of all of the stuff other people are saying.
Oh, so this is one of those drafts where we could see four linemen go in the top eight.
Yeah, it's a really good it's a really good lineman draft, both sides of the ball. You know, there's a third. So after Aquanu and Neal, there's Charles Cross from Mississippi State, who's a tackle, and Penning. And really, it's unclear whether Cross is going to be the third lineman taken or Penny's going to be the third. They're both considered top 10 type guys, I think.
You will start to see some NFL draft pops go up on the Twitter page at ChickenXDinner. And when you see one, you know it's been confirmed by our guy, Mike Helfgott, who has made us money in many drafts over the last couple of years. He's been studying this stuff full time since March of 2020 when COVID happened and everybody was looking for hobbies and things to do. And the information, solid as ever, and these lines move. I remember tweeting out Mac Jones at 17.5 under last year and thinking, I don't know. And within a month, it was 3.5. So I look forward to more information. You've already got your portfolio started. We're going to start ours soon. And the last thing I have, did you hit the Bryant over yet? Hopefully you got a good number.
Oh, coach, 151.5 as soon as it came out.
I just got a direct message from somebody that said, do we like over 155? Question mark. Like, what have we been talking about? You got to hit it on Sunday night, man.
Well, and right. I mean, the guy, it looks like they got a good matchup, right? Wright State scores in the 70s.
Bryant is top 10 in tempo. Wright State is top 100, but it's when you get in that game with Bryant, if you're making shots and they're making shots, it doesn't really matter what the number
exactly. is. As long as you're in a team that doesn't reject the pace. And that's my point. By scoring in the 70s, it looks like Wright State is not a team that rejects pace.
Yeah, the team we didn't want to see was Villanova. Right. You know, and Vegas Rick and I talked about that. He said the only matchup that scares me and the only real possibility that scares me is Villanova-Bryant, because Villanova is going to try to be the first to 60 and Bryant wants to be the first to 90. Here's the other thing. If Bryant can take care of business, and I'm a little nervous to see this steam away from Bryant because now Wright State's a 3.5-point favorite. That makes me nervous. But if we get Bryant in Arizona, coach, that could be 115-90.
Or 125-40.
Whatever. Oh, that'd be under, though. We wouldn't get over that one, I don't think. I think if it's Arizona-Bryant, Arizona gets at least a bill.
Wow. They're great. I agree.
That's Mike Helfgott. He's the coach, and he's going to study this draft for us until the cows come home. I appreciate your time, man. Thank you.
All right, coach. Thanks.
That about does it for Chicken Dinner. Thanks to Mike Helfgott for hopping on the show. Wrapping up an opening round of 9-2-1 in college and 0-2 in the second round. Record check now is 233-240. We're down 5, but feeling good about this Kansas position and feeling good about my mojo after having a great start in the tournament. We'll talk to Mark Titus, taping an interview with Mark later on today on Tuesday, and that'll air for you on Thursday as we get you ready for the Sweet 16 in college basketball. And I do have plenty in the hopper about baseball. I've got plenty of opinions on some future markets, teams to win divisions, make miss the playoffs, World Series futures. I'm going to sit down with my guy Jamai Webster at Nesson, who's a Red Sox reporter. And he knows baseball very, very well. We're going to talk about a lot of the props that have been floating around. Who's going to lead the league in homers? Which guy's going to have the most wins? Red Sox. Win total up 6 from last year. 79.5 on the open. 85.5 this year. That's one of the largest leaps in the entire league. Is it justified? I don't know. Cash up tickets. Make some money. We'll talk to you Thursday right here on Chicken Dinner.
My brother told